Hello and welcome to the September 1st edition of Juneau Afternoon, coming at you live from Juneau, Alaska's capital city. We've got a great show. We'll learn about next week's Suicide Prevention Week. Then we'll chat with Chef Steph about her edible art. She's a featured artist at the Juneau Artist Gallery. Then UAS's Chancellor Rick Caulfield will be here as well. And then we'll end with Nancy DeCharney with Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. South Dakota Congresswoman Kristi Noem says an Indian Health Service hospital in Rapid City will pass federal accreditation this month. Some IHS hospitals in South Dakota have struggled with standards and funding this year. Lee Strubinger reports.
Noem took a walk through Sault Ste. Anne in late August. She says the hospital has had its challenges with CMS accreditation. She says funding could have been pulled in August, but the deadline was pushed back. The hospital has until September to fix issues CMS outlined earlier in the year. Noem says she took the chance to talk with officials about her IHS reform bill.
We looked at some of their challenges that they have with space, the things that they have done to meet requirements that are being told to them from CMS. So I think they've gone a long ways in filling in some gaps that they've had and have worked hard to meet those challenges. You know, when I go into these facilities, the people who are providing care are very dedicated. They love people, they're here to serve, but they face challenges from within the bureaucracy of Indian Health Services.
Noem says she supports fully funding IHS, but not until reforms are made. She says Sault Ste. Anne has a 20% shortage on nursing and physician staff.
When you have that, you have other individuals being pulled from other departments to fill needs, moving around from place to place, people working 12-hour shifts, working many days in a row. They're tired, and it goes on for years and years. So the incentives in my bill that would help us recruit individuals, not only nurses and doctors, but also administration staff, would give us better leadership and help fill the needs that patients have.
Noem is up for re-election in November. Her challenger, Democrat Paula Hawks, says IHS issues exist due to lack of fully funding the service. Hawks cites Noem's vote in favor of sequestration cuts in 2011, which cut $220 million from IHS's budget. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Leaders of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues says the U.S. government needs to recognize the rights of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and include the tribe in consultations. They released a statement Wednesday regarding Standing Rock's effort to stop construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. The leaders called on the U.S. to comply with provisions in the U.N. Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which includes consultation. The U.S. endorsed the U.N. Declaration in 2010. The statement goes on to say the environment is an important part of Indigenous people's lives, and any threats to it impacts families, ancestors, and future generations. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe says the pipeline threatens water. A federal judge is expected to rule this month on a lawsuit filed by the tribe challenging U.S. Army Corps of Engineers pipeline permits. A federal judge has approved a request for U.S. officials to try to recover a sacred Native American item, which went up for auction in Paris in May. The Associated Press reports the judge Wednesday granted a warrant for the return of an Acoma shield. The New Mexico tribe says the item was stolen from the Pueblo years ago. Acoma is working with other tribes across the U.S., federal officials, and members of Congress on efforts to stop the sale of sacred items and bring home ones found at auctions. The Paris auction house removed the shield before it was set to be bid on. Flags on the Navajo Nation are at half-staff for Leander Frank. The Navajo police officer was killed this week in the head-on collision in Arizona after responding to a dispatch call. Frank was killed instantly. The passengers in the other vehicle survived the crash. Frank served on the tribe's police force for more than 13 years and was a senior officer. Arizona's governor has also ordered flags in the state to be flown at half-staff in the officer's honor. According to the tribe, Frank is the 12th Navajo Nation officer to be killed in the line of duty in the past 40 years. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at NARF.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to KTOO's very own Juno Afternoon. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and it is September 1st, and it is 66 degrees outside. Tonight it's going to be mostly cloudy. Isolated showers, they say, for tomorrow. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, and then right into sunny for the rest of the weekend. Rumor has it Northern Lights were out in force last night, and maybe again, depending on how cloudy it gets, we shall see. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And we're going to kick off our show because we have a really interesting show today, as we always do on Juno Afternoon. We have Julie Neihart and Gareth Hummel here. They're here representing the Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your having.
Oh, we appreciate everything Absolutely. You're doing for the community. Let's start about the coalition, the Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition. What is it?
Well, the coalition is a group of individuals who represent themselves or agencies or groups. So, for example, the coalition includes a school district and Juno Youth Services, the police department, the faith community, Juno Alliance for Mental Health Incorporated, Bartlett Memorial Hospital, Bartlett Regional Hospital, I better get that correct, and others, and people like myself who just happen to be interested and am there as a volunteer. And for a lot of information, we can direct you to our websites, and I'm going to let Gareth talk. He's responsible for maintaining our websites and for maintaining our Facebook page, so he knows more about it than I do.
He is your media guy.
Yes.
Well, you can certainly find all the information that we're about the history of the coalition and what the coalition is, and we are here to talk about the upcoming International Suicide Prevention Day and Week. And information about our events are also on that page. If you scroll down to the spotlight section, that's where all that information would be found. That site is the JunoSuicidePreventionCoalition.org.
Great.
And then on Facebook, just search for the same, okay. Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition.
Okay. How long has Coalition been operating?
8 years?
Yes. Okay. It started in 2008, and actually it began primarily focused in the high schools. It started with a school psychologist who got a grant to get some signs of suicide, which is a program that helps people recognize what the signs of suicide are. And it was started in the high schools and back in 2008 or shortly thereafter. And we are very pleased that since that time, during the school year, no student has died by suicide. We think that's important, and it's because there is a supportive program and people are looking for signs. And what the goal of the Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition is to broaden that so that everybody in the community is aware of the signs of suicide and is ready to support people who are in difficulty and to go toward making people more resilient and building their strengths. So those are some of the things that we're doing.
Wow, what a wonderful and valuable resource. That's fantastic. Thank you for what you're doing for our community and everybody who's involved. Obviously, it's quite a wide variety of organizations and resources. But there's also, not the but we're here also to talk about next week is World Suicide Prevention Week. And what are we doing here in Juneau? What is your organization doing to be part of that world
well,
action?
We've arranged for through 360 North, and we're grateful to them for helping us with that, to air a program, a lecture by internationally recognized suicide prevention expert. That video will be on air throughout the week. It's a great lecture, covers all the things that we've talked about so far. So signs that you might look for, which would include substance abuse, lack of interest in things that you might normally be interested in, depression, anxiety, feeling trapped or hopeless. And he covers all those things and then also covers what we might do to help somebody in those types of situations. And that will be airing throughout the week. We are also, and those airtimes again are on our website and also possibly on K2's website. And the play day, and there we want to express gratitude to CBJ. CBJ has play day on the 10th, which coincides. That's the World Suicide Prevention Day. And so we'll have materials, suicide prevention materials, brochures, pencils, pins, that kind of thing out at all the sites there. So that's pretty exciting. And it's, I personally think it's kind of neat that it's play day.
One of the other things about play day that's nice is that it is an example of ways that we can make these connections and things that are strengths for people. So not only can you invite a friend or a family member to go play with you, and that's building connections, but you can also go and play, and all of these venues will have very pleasant activities that are healthy. And we certainly, and with the Suicide Prevention Coalition, promote those healthy activities and connections in the community whenever possible.
For our listeners who are listening and are not familiar with Play Day, can we just talk a little bit about Play Day?
Sure. Yeah. So CBJ puts on free events throughout the community at Zach Gordon, at Augustus Brown Pool, at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, at the fire station, the Douglas Public Library. So there are free events throughout the day.
On September 10th.
On September 10th, exactly.
Which is also World Suicide Prevention Day. So people who are listening, they could learn more about going to your website, which is the same as your name, Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition.
.org.
And then the Facebook page. And then if people want to join the coalition, would they go to the same places and send you an email through there?
They could send an email or they could simply show up. Our meetings are very regular. Every third Wednesday at 3 p.m. At Bartlett Memorial Hospital. So it's in the administration building. And so if it's not in the boardroom, it's on the first floor. And we're there every third Wednesday at 3 o'clock. So other things that I would like to talk about, if we could, is
Absolutely.
What happens if you see the warning signs in someone. So we're kind of afraid sometimes to express concern. We can be concerned and we just don't know quite what to say. So if you're watching people and there's someone you know and you realize their behavior is just different from what it usually is, they're sleeping more than usual or they're not sleeping at all, or as Gareth mentioned earlier, they just aren't interested in the things they used to like to do, you need to express your concern, and then there's a very important question that you should ask. And that question is, are you thinking about killing yourself? It's very direct. It's hard to say, but it's extremely important. So once you've asked that question, then you can go on to the next step. And you shouldn't be afraid if you have no idea what that next step is. Ask the question first and then go to resources and stay with that person if they've answered yes.
Because there are resources here.
There are resources.
So your organization is obviously a coalition of many resources. So, and that's, if you're just joining us, that was Julie Neihart, and Gareth Hummel is also in the studio with us. And they're talking about Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition. Next week is World Suicide Prevention Week. and the day itself is the 10th. So, Gareth, you'd like to add something?
Well, I was just thinking about if you didn't feel like you knew, it's useful to cover those steps as quickly as possible as far as asking that question, that important question, are you thinking of taking your life? Are you thinking of killing yourself? And you can always preface that. I've noticed this behavior. I've noticed this change. Are you okay? Are you thinking of taking your life? The follow-up would be in quick steps. They're abbreviated. You know, if it's immediate danger, call 911. If it's critical but not necessarily immediate, you'd ask, do you have a plan? And that's how you'd find out if it was immediate or critical. If it's immediate danger, call 911. If it's critical, ask if you can go to the hospital or work whatever way you can to get to the hospital. If it's not as immediate, seek a way to help that person, find someone who can help take care of them and help them find something that they care about. Help them find resources as far as who they can talk to. And you can always call the care line is a great way to have immediate help. And that number is 877-266-HELP.
Well, that was very informative and great practical advice. Thank you both for being part of this coalition and what you do for Juno. And you're welcome anytime to come and talk to us about what's going on with the coalition and how to help. That sounds great.
Thank you very much. We hope people will tune in to 360 North and watch Dr. Bauer's video. And also, there are other opportunities to learn more about suicide prevention and what to do. Mental health first aid is an example. QPR is another. And you can watch for opportunities for those sorts of trainings.
And if you want more information to follow up this little chat that we've had, by all means, go to the website, JunoSuicidePreventionCoalition.org. Thank you so much for coming in today. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 1st of September, 2016. It was on this date, 1873, the cable cars first began to run in San Francisco. Andrew Smith Halliday, 4 years before, on a foggy day, saw a team of horses struggling to pull a horse-drawn car up a steep cobblestone street. The horses were being whipped, but they lost their footing, they fell, and they were fatally dragged by the car as it rolled down the hill. And Halliday determined to find a better way, a way to couple a steam engine and a cable to get a car up the hills of San Francisco. He tried it out at 4 o'clock in the morning on an August day from the top of Knob Hill, and it ran, began public service on this day, 1873, and it made Andrew Smith Halliday a very wealthy man. It was on this day, 1773, that Phyllis Wheatley, 20 years old, born in West Africa, brought over as a slave as a young girl, published her poems on various subjects, religious and moral, a book that George Washington thought was pretty good. Here's a poem for today by Wyatt Prunty, The Ferris Wheel. The rounding steeps and jostles were one thing, and he held tight with so much circling. The pancaked earth came magnifying up, then shrank, as climbing backward to the top, he looked ahead for something in the fields to stabilize the wheel. Sometimes it stopped, the chairs rocked back and forth as couples holding hands got off and others climbed into the empty chairs. Then they were turning, singles, pairs, rising, falling through everything they saw, whatever thing they saw. Below the crowd, a holiday of shirts, straw hats, balloons, and brightly colored skirts. So beautiful, he thought, looking down now, while the stubborn wheel ground on, as to allow some stark monotony within for those festooned along the rim. The engine, axle, spokes, and gears were rigged so at the top the chairs danced, tipsy jigs a-teetering, both balanced and extreme. "Oh, no," the couples cried, laughing. "Stop," they screamed over the rounding down they rode along, centrifugal and holding on. And he held too, thinking maybe happiness was simply going on, kept up unless the wheel slowed or stopped for good. Otherwise, there were the voices expectant of surprise. Funny to hear, he thought, their cries, always late each time the wheel would hesitate. Since the genius of the wheel was accident, the always almost that hadn't a minor agony rehearsed as fun, while the lights came up and dark replaced the sun, seeming to complete their going round all day, paying to be turned that way. Later, standing off, he felt the wheel's mild dread going as though it lapped the miles ahead and rolled them up into the cloudless black, while those who rode accelerated back and up into the night's steep zero-G that proved them free. A poem by Wyatt Prunty, The Ferris Wheel, from Unarmed and Dangerous, published by the Johns Hopkins University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's real estate, home, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles on the unique lifestyle of Southeast, available online at seakliving.com.
It is 22 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. It is a whopping 66 degrees outside on September 1. But here in the studio, it's nice and toasty. We've got Chef Steph here. She is the featured artist of the Juno Artist Gallery's First Friday event, which takes place tomorrow, the first Friday of every month. And she creates edible art. She's an edible artist. And she's here to talk about salted caramels, and she brought in a whole variety. So we're just laughing as Jeff was chomping on a spicy hot pepper salted chocolate caramels, which is like a grown-up Tootsie Roll. It is, like, so fantastic. It's got this perfect little bite, but not too much, and a great aftertaste. And then there's also Sitka spruce tip salted caramels, and they're all beautifully packaged and really yummy. So welcome to the show, Chef.
Well, thank you. Chef, everybody does that. It's
exactly.
Okay. I answer to both.
You do. Yo. So let's talk about this odyssey. You've been making the salted caramels for a while, correct?
The salted caramels are actually pretty new. They're about 6 months.
Oh, I guess
6 months
last time
new.
Around when you first started, you came around or something like that.
It was the licorice.
Oh,
so I'm all about the salt
really
now.
So let's talk about caramel. So they're about 6 months. They're a newish product for you.
Yes. I've always had the salted caramel on the shortbreads. And it just took a little bit extra temperatures cooking it to make them solid or harder or workable. So I sell them in a 4-pack. An 8-pack and a 12-pack. The 12-pack I'm testing, I think that might be more holiday time, but being that I'm the featured artist, I wanted to give a variety and sort of test out what people are interested in size-wise. And then I also have individual rolled caramels that you can buy as well. And those aren't packaged. It's just one piece. Yeah, sometimes you want a treat right then and there, and you can, and you can't decide if you want the Sitka spruce or the spicy hot pepper. So they're like a dollar a piece, so you could get both, and then you'll taste them, and you'll be like, oh my God, I need more. And, you know, it's the gateway candy.
They really are. They are really, really good. So do you have a favorite spicy hot pepper salted chocolate caramels or citrus spruce salted, spruce tip salted caramels?
Yes, yes. I think one is my favorite, and then I'll have the other. And the citrus spruce tip salt is so delicious, and I want the spruce tip is in the salt, not the caramel. So the salt comes from the Alaska Pure Sea Salt Company in Sitka, and in fact, the chocolate caramels, I'll tell you the story how that formed. I was delivering some product when I went to Sitka this summer, and I said, yeah, I'm testing out a chocolate caramel, and it's not, yeah, I had it with the blueberry salt and with the salt, the smoked salt, all the salts, and it just wasn't working. And we were at the store, and we were having a conversation, and they have all their salts lined out. They have, every time I go, there's a new flavor, which gets me all excited. And at the same time, we saw the we saw the hot pepper salt, and we're like, oh my God, that's it. And I went home. I didn't even test it. I just made them because I knew it would work. And so this time there actually is heat in the chocolate, but there is cinnamon, cayenne, and black pepper, and then there's hot pepper sauce in the salt. So the combo is really great, and it's not hot. Like you said, when you first put it in your mouth, you're like, I don't get the heat. And it's pretty much when you swallow, you'll get the heat. And it's subtle, but it's nice.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's really fantastic. It's a great, because I don't really like spicy things, and it was just a great combo. What do you think, Jeff? Thumbs up, good. There we go.
Yeah, we were laughing at Jeff because he was chomping, and we were all like, yeah, he's happy he's not on the mic right now.
I have a rule. I don't eat or drink on the air. That's the way it is.
So I got Joan right before
so we could
give her a treat.
So I have like this vision of you in your kitchen, like, you know, it's like a wild scientist laboratory.
There's a lot
and
of
a big
stirring. There's a lot of stirring. I'm starting to get Popeye forearms because caramel, it's a very exact temperature, and there's just a lot of stirring, and it's hot. So, but I love it so much. It's so much fun, and it's delicious. It's almost too delicious. You know, cutting them up. Oh, that piece is too small. Oh, darn.
Another
I guess I'll
test.
Have to eat that.
So if you're just joining us, we're chatting with Chef Steph. It is First Friday tomorrow. She is the featured artist at the Juno Artist Gallery. So when people go to the Artist Gallery, what can they expect for
you know,
First
we
Friday?
We have new artists. If you haven't been to the gallery in a couple of months, come by, because the artists are always changing. We have a bunch of new artists, and I'm so flattered to be and honored to be among such talented people. The work is beautiful, and there's jewelry and photography and beadwork and fiber work. There's a woman who makes scarves that are just gorgeous, and it's still warm in the gallery, but I can't wait to till it gets a little cooler and I get to model them
there
when I'm in. You know, I try on. You know, I'm sometimes wearing a necklace or the work is it's wonderful, and there's pottery and painting and the people are it's such a wonderful group to be around, and they're talented and they're nice. And they also really enjoy food. So for First Friday, just like any potluck in Juneau, people show their best. So we pride ourselves on having the best snacks. And everybody
here.
And everybody was super kind and, oh, do you not want us to bring any baked goods because you have your treats? And I was like, nope, you bring what you I did. I'm going to be there. I want you to make I want you to bring the stuff that I like.
Exactly. So you're talking about the scarf, but you're wearing something in the studio, so you have a new product, I see.
I do. I'm super excited. I have a Chef Steph apron, and I'm really excited about it. Aurora Project did the printing, and so it says Chef Steph in the top pocket, and the bottom pocket is the state of Alaska, and the Aurora Project logo on there, so I want them to, I want everybody to know about them as well. And it's just fun, and I giggle when I wear it, and it's my uniform.
So if I wear one of those, I'll be able to whip out caramels in my own kitchen.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. You totally can.
Anyone who knows me thinks, no, she really can.
Now I'm going to be... Anybody with an apron, you know, is going to have to help me to get ready for public market.
There you go. So if people can't make it down to the best snacks, as Chef Steph says, to First Friday tomorrow, you have a website, right? So
I do have a website.
To order things?
Yes. Please go onto the website. But I'm at the gallery year-round, and the stuff is there year-round. And for whatever reason, if I'm out of something, just say... talk to the person on duty. We call each other all the time, and I could either say, oh, my gosh, I'll bring some down right now, or I'll call you back when I have it. And
whip it up in my laboratory.
Yeah. I'll get one of the apron-wearing helpers.
There you go.
But I do have a website, www.chefsteffs.com.
Great.
It is a very difficult name to say over the phone and over the radio. Leave it to me to make a simple name difficult.
I think it's a great name. So these spicy hot pepper salted chocolate caramels, they're new, right?
They are new.
Okay. I had one of the first ones, and it was really good.
Well, good. I'm so glad you like them. Packaging is almost as hard as coming up with products, because you could come up with a great product, but if the package doesn't work, you can't get it out there. And I was testing boxes, and they were all solid. You couldn't see. And that doesn't work. You need to see it. And especially the salt. The salt crystals are big and beautiful, and they're just, oh, my gosh, it's so lovely to see. I had been rolling them, but you don't see the salt, and then the salt gets caked in, which is very good as well. It just, you can't see it. And then I found these boxes. They are shallow boxes, which is about the height of the caramel, and they're clear, so you could see.
It's beautiful.
Right in them. And I saw that, and I was like, yay! Once again, didn't get a test batch. I knew that they would work, and because I tested everything else.
And here they are.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in today.
Well, thanks, you guys. And as always, thank you for... being such a great venue for us to get word out.
Yeah, it's great. First Friday tomorrow, Juno Artist Gallery is participating. Chef Steph is the featured artist. She makes edible art, and we just sampled some of the caramels, and we could say, get thee to the Juno Artist Gallery.
Well,
we're
going to
take
you.
Short break, and we'll be right back.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Chocolate is now beans from Brazil, milk from the cow. Chocolate is love. Please don't mention the chemical connection chocolate makes in my head. It's Swiss Miss, I'm drinking, eating Hershey bars and thinking, if I can't be in love, I'll have a truffle instead. Cocoa is warm, fudgesicles chill.
Ladies and gentlemen, chocolate is a big part of our lives, and we'd like to share with you now our testimonials in the hopes that each and every one of you will accept chocolate into your lives.
At night I dream of hot fudge and ice cream, Snickers are fine, milk does divine,
Häagen-Dazs chocolate chip is a trip.
I couldn't survive without my Godiva. A chunky when I feel funky.
A Toll House cookie is better than Nookie.
N-E-S-T-L-E-S. Never.
truffle instead. Cocoa is warm, fudgesicles chill. Whatever the form, it's always a thrill. Chocolate is love.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon live from KTLO's studio in downtown Juno. It is 25 minutes to the hour. Yes, it's still 66 degrees on September 1st. Jeff Brown is at the board. He is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And our next guest is Chancellor Rick Caulfield. He's the Chancellor of the University of Alaska Southeast out the road. He's been doing that job for about a year. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joan. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So you're here to talk about an upcoming Board of Regents meeting.
Right. The Board of Regents is the governing body for the University of Alaska system. So they are in charge of, first of all, hiring our president, Jim Johnson, and then setting policy for our three universities, University of Alaska Fairbanks, University of Alaska Anchorage, and then here in Southeast, University of Alaska Southeast, with our three campuses in Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan. And once a year, they meet here in Juneau. So that's coming up on September 15th and 16th, Thursday and Friday, here in Juneau. And they'll be meeting at the Student Recreation Center on the Auk Lake campus. And the public, of course, is welcome to participate. It starts at 8 o'clock each of those days and usually extends until about 5. So we wanted to make sure that people in the Juneau community are aware of the Regents being here. And then importantly, there are actually going to be two opportunities to engage with the Regents coming up very soon that I thought I would highlight and talk a little bit more about some of the issues that are facing the university that might be of interest to listeners. First of all, the Regents always invite public testimony when they hold their meetings, but this year they're going to actually be doing that in a different way. They've struggled to try to accommodate all the public interest that's been shown during the meeting days themselves. And so what they've decided to do, number one, is to hold a teleconference in advance of the meeting, and that's going to take place on the 6th, next Tuesday, statewide. And some listeners will be familiar with the way the legislature invites public input. People can call in from anywhere in the state. And so that is the structure that's been put in place. So between 4 and 6 next Tuesday, the 6th of September, members of the public can call 866-726-0757, and a moderator will put them in the queue, and they'll have an opportunity to address the Regents for up to 2 minutes. Not a lot of time, but the advantage here, of course, is that we'll have an opportunity not only for people who are in the room to speak, but Alaskans, wherever they may be, from Shishmaref to Ketchikan, can call in and address the Regents. And then, importantly as well, a second opportunity, especially because the Regents will be here in Juneau, is on the evening of Thursday the 15th. There's a community forum, a more informal gathering for people who are here in Juneau from 5:30 to 7 in the same location at our Student Recreation Center. And again, this is an opportunity where members of the public can come in and just chat informally with the Regents, something that they really appreciate because there's a good opportunity for give and take and not just in a two-minute time frame. So we wanted members of the public to know about the Regents coming here to Juneau on the 15th and 16th of September, Thursday and Friday. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting if they're interested. And then these two opportunities on the 6th of September to call in, number one, between 4 and 6 p.m., and then secondly, on the evening of Thursday the 15th at our rec center to have an informal conversation with members of our Board of Regents.
If you're just joining us, that's Chancellor Caulfield from University of Alaska Southeast talking about this upcoming Board of Regents meeting and this opportunity for public testimony. I have a couple of questions. So we have the teleconference that's statewide, which is great, and then we have an opportunity here in Juneau, a little more informal where you can have a back and forth with someone. Is the topic open to anything to do with the university system, or is there a framework for the conversation?
The topics feedback are really wide open. It's meant to invite feedback from the public generally. But I would say, importantly, this is a really critical time for the University of Alaska system. I think everyone is aware of we're all aware of the challenges budgetarily the state of Alaska is dealing with, and of course the university is no different. We're all struggling with that and hoping for clarity down the line about what our budget situation will be. But we took a significant reduction in our budget this past year. We did the year before as well. It's possible we'll see the same thing again in the year coming ahead. And so President Jim Johnson, in light of that, has put into motion something called Strategic Pathways. And he's really asking us all to look at every aspect of the university system, academically and administratively, and to look all the more at integration across our three universities, Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Southeast. And so here in Southeast Alaska, with our three campuses, Genosik and Ketchikan, we are the smallest of the three universities. We're about 8% of our budget and student headcount and things of that nature. So often we're influenced by decisions that are made affecting UAA and UAF. We also have a number of shared programs across the state, and in light of budget reductions, I think the president is looking for greater efficiencies to reduce costs, any redundancies that might exist in the system where, and we've already made some adjustments in this regard. And I would say, too, using new technologies that are available where we can, it's possible to take classes, say, by video conference or asynchronously, as we say, on the web. And be able to take classes from a variety of locations. In fact, we find more and more of our students, probably 25 or 30%, taking classes across campuses. They're not only in one campus alone. Many students, of course, still have the campus-based experience face-to-face, but a growing number are taking online classes. So Strategic Pathways is all about these types of efficiencies, reducing costs, and we hope in the end improving the quality of what we're able to offer. It may mean, it does mean budget cuts. We know that. At the same time, where do we put our resources into programs to ensure that we're really meeting the needs of the state of Alaska? One very prominent need that we're working hard on is producing more quality Alaskan teachers, because the University of Alaska system only produces about a third of all the teachers who are hired every year in Alaska. About two-thirds of our teachers every year are hired from out of the state. And, you know, some of that is, I'm sure, fine. There's some mixing and new ideas that come to Alaska. But wouldn't it be great to see far more Alaskan teachers who understand the peoples and the cultures and the languages of Alaska? They know about the weather here. They're comfortable living here, excited about educating our next generation of Alaskans. And so the president has made that a priority, and the regents are saying the same thing. They would really love to see us dramatically increase the number of teachers educated here in Alaska and going to work.
How does one do that?
It's a big challenge. I think one thing we need to do is, through Strategic Pathways, look at how we provide teacher education so that we're minimizing any redundancies, we're being as effective as we possibly can. I think we have to work very closely with school districts. Many times we have students in, say, high school who have an interest in becoming a teacher, but don't really know what the pathway looks like. And so I think encouraging students while they're still in middle school or high school, if they have an interest in becoming a teacher, to get involved with programs that can lead them in that direction. And it might well mean earning a degree in biology or in math, in English, but then they know that we offer a really efficient Master of Arts in Teaching program. So you get that degree in math, you get that degree in English, and then you spend 1 year in an intensive program where you actually have a lot of hands-on time in a classroom with a mentor teacher, and then you're eligible for certification by the state as a teacher. So I think working all the more in partnership with the 54 school districts around the state is essential. And I would say, too, working with other entities, working with tribes, working with Native corporations, many of the vacancies are in rural Alaska. So all the more importance of finding prospective teachers who come from the communities and the cultures where the need is greatest for teachers.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. That would be wonderful to implement that and grow our own. And
yes,
of course, people from here who come back, they sprout roots maybe a little deeper.
Yes, that's
not
right.
Not necessarily. Alaska wants, you know, you're either an Alaskan or you're not. You
right.
know what I mean? If you come it, you when you come here, you love it, or you put your time in and
move on. And when you have teachers that love it and love learning and love those kids, they're going to pass that on. We all know we've had teachers in our own experience who were truly inspirational, And that's what you want. Teachers who are not thinking about, I'm going to get out of here next year. You have teachers who are really invested in the future of our communities, large and small. And so that's the type of graduate that we hope to produce all the more from the University of Alaska system.
Right. And that's a great opportunity to do a shout out to all the fantastic teachers in the Juneau School District and out at UAS. Thanks for what you do. So it's really important work. So one more time, the Board of Regents is coming. They're looking for public testimony. It's your opportunity to perhaps shape the future of the university system in Alaska and also here in Juneau. And what are those dates for the teleconference and the actual meeting itself and the public comment part of that meeting?
So the Board of Regents meeting itself is on Thursday and Friday, the 15th and 16th of September at our Auk Lake campus, the Recreation Center. The opportunity for public testimony is this coming Tuesday, next week, on the 6th, and that is from 4 until 6. And again, the phone number is 866-726-0757. And then the informal opportunity face-to-face here in Juneau is on Thursday, the 15th, from 5:30 to 7. And I would say that for information about the strategic pathways that I've talked about, listeners can go to www.alaska.edu/pathways, or I think you can even just enter into Google Strategic Pathways Alaska, and you'll find a lot of information. The focus right now is on important programs like teacher education, our School of Management, our Master of Public Administration program. You may have heard about the debate regarding athletics. Doesn't affect UAS directly, but it does other parts of the state. And so some really important discussions are going to be taking place. And I would just encourage people, if you're interested in testifying, think about communicating how education has changed your life, both in terms of an understanding of the world, the global environment that we live in, or improving your job opportunities or those of your family. So that's one thing. And also think about, especially here in Southeast Alaska, how the University of Alaska Southeast contributes to economic development and diversification of our economy. Because these are times when everything is on the table, and I think it's important for all of us in Southeast Alaska to communicate with our regents and our political leadership about why the university matters here in Southeast, in Juneau, in Sitka, in Ketchikan. I hear all the time from graduates how important having a university here in Southeast has been, and I have the privilege of shaking the hand of every graduate when they walk across the stage, and I can just tell you that the smiles on the faces of those graduates, often non-traditional students, not between 18 and 24, but they often have children, or they have family responsibilities, they're working and going to school at the same time, and you see the smiles on the faces of their families and the pride that they have, and then employers saying, not only did you produce, you know, three new employees that we're really happy to have in our workplace, send me five more. And that's what I love to hear. So this is an opportunity to share your thoughts about the importance of higher education in Southeast Alaska when the regents are here.
That sounds like a wonderful opportunity. Thank you for coming in today and
My
all that
pleasure.
You do for Juneau and the university itself. And if you want more information, I assume that there's information at the university's website.
That's correct. You can always go to www.alaska.edu/pathways. And I would say, too, if anyone has a question, I'm quite happy to talk to you by phone. 796-6509 is my number. Feel free to give me a call if you have a question.
That sounds great. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. Grab your binoculars, follow your state's birding trail map, and you have a good chance to see the birds of your region. On a summer trip in New England, along the Connecticut River between Vermont and New Hampshire, you can hear the vividly colored Blackburnian warbler. Hit the Rhode Island Coastal Birding Trail in winter, and you'll hear the calls of thousands of long-tailed ducks. Head west to the Chicago Birding Trail to savor the songs of the rose-breasted grosbeak and scarlet tanager. Texas birding trails offer birds that can't be found anywhere else in the United States, like the green jay,
and this Altamira Oriole. Washington State's birding loops guide you from Puget Sound with its tufted puffins to the arid lands east of the Cascades and the beautiful song of the sage sparrow. Many stops are on local, state, or national parks or refuges, all public lands. National Audubon and the American Birding Association offer lots of information about birding trails. Chances are there's a birding trail near you. Let your first stop be birdnote.org. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, in partnership with KTOO, is thrilled to bring Grammy-nominated musician Modest Yahoo to Juneau on September 23rd. Expect an intimate, supercharged performance that blends reggae, beatboxing, hip-hop, singer-songwriting, and a whole lot of soul. Tickets at the Jack and Hearthside Books. Modest Yahoo in Juneau, September 23rd.
Hey, it is 9 minutes to the hour. If you are downtown, if you're in downtown Juneau, in front of the new museum, there is Alaska's earthquake simulator. So that they're there till 7 o'clock tonight. It's a learn to stop, drop, and roll with Capital City firefighters, and it's just really a kind of educational opportunity to learn about what to do in an earthquake. So that's kind of interesting. And then, of course, here we have on Saturday at 10 o'clock, the Whale Project Committee invites the public to the unveiling of the life-size whale sculpture, now located in its permanent residence in the park next to the Juneau Douglas Bridge. So that is 10 o'clock on Saturday. And then we also have something here. That's not good because that already happened. Hey, but the municipal election is scheduled. That has not happened. That is Tuesday, October 4th. So to help get you ready before you cast your vote, the League of Women Voters, Juneau, and KTOO invite you to the municipal election forum on Wednesday, September 14th in the Assembly Chambers beginning at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30 for that. Okay, that should be really interesting. And then it's also going to be live on KTOO at 7 p.m. So that's kind of interesting. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Okay, Nancy DeCherney is on her way into the studio, but before she comes on in, I'm just going to read a little more fun facts about what's going on this weekend. There's the Labor Day weekend Fun Run Walk, which is Saturday, September 3rd at 9 a.m. It's sponsored by the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center, and it starts at the Birth Center at Salmon Creek Lane, and then it's a one-mile walk run to the base of Salmon Creek Hill and a five-mile run to the Powerhouse, both ending at the Birth Center. For more information, you could call 586-1203. And now this just in from the NOAA Fisheries, and this is not a Jeff Brown joke. This is a reminder from the NOAA Fisheries from not to feed sea lions. Feeding sea lions or other marine mammals is illegal and often results in nuisance and potentially dangerous behavior from animals. So you heard it here. do not feed sea lions. And then we also have the Capital Brewfest coming up. That's September 17th, and tickets are going to go fast. This is sponsored by the Rotary Club, and it's always a great time. It's from 1 to 5 at the Jack, and you can find that all out, more information at KTOO or at jahc.org. Well, it looks like we're going to wrap up the show now. So it is 4 minutes to the hour on September 1st. Right now it's partly sunny, high near 66. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 47. Tomorrow, isolated showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 61. Tomorrow night, lows around 48, mostly cloudy. Saturday and sunny. Saturday and Sunday, both sunny, 63, 62, and then we're looking at a chance of rain on Sunday night and then rain likely for the rest of the week. So tomorrow is First Friday, 4:30 it starts. Many different venues. Come downtown, check out the many different things offered by galleries and many of our local shops. And, of course, tomorrow at 3 p.m., Andy Klein is in the studio. He's got a great show. He'll be chatting with Sewell Bailey, who's a fabulous cellist, and hear about a public meeting regarding fireworks in the parks and details about this weekend's Cornholer Invitational and information about the Alaska Youth Choir, who has a new artistic director. Thanks for joining Jeff Brown and myself, Joan Partis, in the KTO studios. Juno Afternoon is live from Alaska's capital city. Have a great day.